Welcome. Here you will hear stories of the unknown, tales of the twisted and terrible that have been silenced, the strange and the transcendent, riddles, secrets. As your guides, we will take you on an expedition where the curtain between worlds is torn. This is The Farthest Reaches.
Why is your stool sample on the desk?
You don't mind if I just leave that there, do you?
I guess.
List of legal pets to own in Ohio. I'm curious. Cats, dogs, rabbits, hamsters, gerbils, mice, rats, ferrets, birds. I want more. 2020. This is outdated. Fish. I know that. Come on. Where's like Komodo dragon? Oh, we can't own a finger monkey. And I promise that is not a sexual innuendo.
You call me a finger monkey?
Or is some kind of like weird, crazy dildo? No. I don't know, because I want to know exotic. Ooh, yeah, exotic pets. Ooh. What's this? I don't know.
I was going to say, no. I know it differs by state, too.
I don't want notifications.
Because, like, there are some states where you can have raccoons and others that you can't.
Oh, so you can own a fox and a peacock, but you have to, like, do some crazy shit to get a permit.
Sounds about right. I love the determination on your face.
I know. I'm always determined by stupid shit like this. If I want to own a hippo, I'm going to own a hippo.
God, could you imagine?
No, absolutely cannot. In my little stream back there.
Well, because like...
people are like, what is that?
Well, because a lot of like pet stores, they have like...
Hippos there?
Just an open leash policy. So like any pet, if you have it on a leash, you can bring it in. Because there was a video where somebody tested it and they brought in like a fucking bull down in Texas, I think it was. And I'm like, huh.
Good on them.
And I'm like, you know what? I want a pet gator and put a collar on it.
Oh,
walk into the pet store with my pet gator.
I could put a stop to all the little annoying dogs and shit that come in there that their owners just let them yap constantly. They don't give a fuck for it. I'm like,
yep.
Maximum annihilator, destroyer of the cosmos. Eat that right now. Madoc for short. Anyway. Hey.
Hi.
I'll look at my list of legal pets to own. Another day, I guess. I'm not here for... Ooh, a sloth. Wait a minute. There's more. Yeah, I can own a sloth as long as I have a valid license. So what if I walk with my driver's license? It's a valid license. It says right here, it doesn't expire until 2026.
You have to get...
Give me a sloth.
I was going to say, do you actually have to get like a sloth owner like ID?
I hope so. I hope you have to get an ID of the sloth. So like you have to take his little picture. Oh, that'd be so cute. Anyway, we're not here for pets at all.
We're not.
This is a President's Day special brought by TFR.
It sure is. And I'll be honest, I have no idea what the fuck this episode's going to be about other than you said
it's
presidents.
In the name.
And I was like, well, all right.
Okay, so.
So I can already tell you that this is just going to be the most accurate, factual episode ever. Because if there is one thing that presidents have never done in the history of this country is lie.
I plead the fifth.
Okay.
So this episode is going to detail a few stories that some directly associate with presidents, or they might associate with the White House, or they might associate someone that the president knows. Either or, it's to showcase that throughout all levels of the American government, the American people, just the American establishment, that the supernatural, this weird 14 bullshittery that happens all the time, It's littered with it. I don't care how far up the ladder you go.
Oh, yeah.
And just, you know, since we've been releasing these episodes primarily in the beginning of the week, we thought, why not do a President's Day special? Because it kind of falls right into our order. So we thought, yeah, why not? I know some stories that are kind of spooky with presidents, so I thought I'll just throw them all in a pot and make one big episode about it.
I'll be honest. Ever since we graduated high school and I don't get the day off for it, I forgot President's Day was a thing.
I understand. I mean, unless you work in some sort of government facility like the post office or a bank, it really doesn't apply to you.
Nope. That category of like holidays, I just forget exist until somebody's like, oh, it's this day. And I'm like, why? I'm like trying to go to the bank. And they're like, we're not open. I'm like, what the fuck? It's Monday.
Yeah, shouldn't President's Day be like the inauguration?
It's like fucking Labor Day. Why are people getting off for Labor Day?
Yeah, we work all the time. But
it doesn't make any sense.
But yeah, so I'm Matthew. That's Josh.
Hi.
Like always, together, TFR. What's TFR stand for, Josh?
The farthest reaches.
Yep. I mean, that's it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. No
that
joke
apparently,
there.
According to what email we got recently, we've been talked about in good terms, and I'm suspicious.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to even reach out to them. I should probably do
you
that.
You should probably do that.
I should probably do that. Yeah. But we love what you guys put out. You're so good. Like, nice try. Yeah, we know we suck. Okay.
Who's talking
Stop
about
lying
us.
To me.
Ooh, who out there? Who? I sound like a fucking owl. Who?
I heard the superb owl was the other day.
It was.
And congratulations to the Kansas City Swifties.
Queefs.
Uh-huh. Why?
I don't know, because that's just what I hear.
Because it rhymes?
There's a guy on TikTok that he, like, does narration and stuff for a lot of, like, all the games throughout the season, and he calls them the Kansas City Queefs, and it makes me laugh, and so it kind of just sticks in my head.
I like it, too. I also like the Swifties. Because anything to make some sort of middle-aged white American male mad, I'm here for it.
Yep.
But yeah, good for them.
I guess.
Good for them. I don't know. I don't follow football anymore. I mean, so what?
Well, and here's the thing, too, talking about Taylor Swift. People were like, oh, she was shown so much. Somebody on Instagram or TikTok somewhere, or maybe it was even X. They're like, they added up the total amount of time that she was on screen. It was like 58 seconds. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that makes sense. 58 seconds is a long time for a lot of men out there.
Got nice. Him. Yes, you did. Oh, God. I can hear him now.
Sorry, I'm drinking my twisted tea. So it's
making, yeah, you're only a quarter of the way through
it. So it's
it.
Making me.
And you're already just fucking lit, dude.
Making me, what's the word? Honorary.
Honorary. That's the word you were looking for?
It's not, but it's the one that came up.
That's the first time I've ever heard you say that fucking word. I didn't know it was in your vocabulary.
There's a lot of words in my vocabulary you don't know about.
Yeah, like gobbledygook?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, same. Anyway, TFR, President's Day special. Shall we get right into it?
Did you know there used to be a wrestler Great. That came out just as a turkey, and his name was the Gobbledygooker?
The Gobbledygooker? I thought it was going to be gobbledygooky.
Nope, gobbledygooker.
Gobbledygooker.
Yeah, wrestling's fun.
The names are fun.
Uh-huh. Like my Undertaker shirt that I have today.
That's true. I do like that.
Rest in peace. And it's just a big old picture of the Undertaker.
I mean, what more could you ask for?
All I want in life.
You'll like the way you look.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. I want to move on now. Is that cool?
Men's Warehouse.
Yeah. Yeah. Sponsored. Buy your tux with our code that doubles the price.
So, Matthew.
Yeah?
What is our first President's Day story?
Oh, well, I think today I'm going to start with someone you might have heard of named Teddy Roosevelt.
I don't know who that is.
Okay. So he was a president, in case
oh,
you didn't
wait,
know.
It's the guy from Night at the Museum.
Yes. That's how people will remember him. Yeah. But he was in that movie with Ben Stiller.
Hey,
talk to Ben Stiller about him.
He was played by Robin Williams in Night at the Museum. So, of course.
Was it Robin Williams?
Yeah.
Why do I feel like he was somebody else?
No, it was Teddy Roosevelt.
I don't know.
He was Teddy Roosevelt.
I'm not in the cult following of A Night at the Museum.
Because oddly enough, that's where the band that we were talking about earlier, A Day to Remember, they got the name of their one song, I Made a Laxwary, What Are You Made Of?
Oh.
Came from that fucking movie.
No way.
Yeah, it's one of his
Did
quotes.
Really?
Yeah. It all comes
Incredible.
Full circle.
I want everybody to disrespect their surroundings right now.
Synchronicities.
I'll give you 10 seconds to just throw and punch and just fuck around so much shit you
can. I have
can.
Two open containers next to me. I'm going to be very...
Why are you double fisting like that?
Well, because one, I wanted alcohol and I haven't finished my Monster
What do they call
yet?
It double fisting? Because that sounds so unpleasant.
My Monster Reserved Orange Dreamsicle, which is my new obsession.
Sponsor us.
And
double the price.
It's real fucking good.
Yes, it is.
Let's talk about Teddy.
Use code TFR at checkout.
Yep.
I don't know where, though.
One day we'll have a code. But anyways, on to Theodore Roosevelt.
So, yeah, Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt, otherwise as he is known. I got two stories associated with him. One of them is... You know, kind of a Bigfoot feel.
Oh, I think I actually know that story.
And one of them is the Snallygaster.
Ooh.
Which we've thrown that name a couple times throughout the course of this show.
Yeah, shout out to the Snallygaster Museum.
Absolutely, and we should probably have Sarah on to help teach us, because one day we will get to the Snallygaster.
We should. And but if there's one person that knows all there is to know, it is her.
It is absolutely Sarah Cooper of the American Snallygaster Museum. Check it out if you haven't already. But first, I'm going to talk about the Bigfoot story, which in my, prefacing this episode with what it's going to be about, this is one of the stories where it doesn't actively concern the president. It does not concern Teddy Roosevelt. However, Teddy told the story from somebody else. And so the fact that he did, and some of his verbiage and stuff, and how he speaks about this tale shows you that, again, even through the highest levels of the American government, you can have the president believing in a lot of woo-woo and just trying to grasp your head around what they want to do with that knowledge and what they think about it. It's kind of mind-boggling in a way.
Uh-huh.
And I will showcase that through some of these stories.
It's like there's a certain... I'm not going to name any names because we're not going to get political on this podcast. But
why not?
I saw a video.
We're literally getting political right now.
Of a presidential candidate.
Donald Trump.
Who was talking about a certain group.
Donald Trump.
They win. Once do you apparently change the name of Pennsylvania? Because that's apparently a thing. I was like, what the fuck?
How about just change the name how it's pronounced? Pennsylvania.
I was like, is that a thing that's on the market? Because I don't fucking know anymore.
Sounds like an Italian dish. Can I get a Pennsylvania with meatballs?
Oh my God, it does.
That sounds good.
Of course it sounds good to you.
Fuck you. Fuck you. You can go sit over there. So back to Teddy Roosevelt. I'm going to start with that whole kind of Bigfoot story. Anyway, so Teddy Roosevelt was...
Did you say Teddy Roosevelt?
Yes. Yeah. Teddy Roosevelt was an avid game hunter all his life. Traveling to different GameStops throughout the country, searching for Red Dead Redemption, you know?
I was going to say, he's just out there hunting Mario.
I saw the look on your face when I said it. You're like, games. No, I have a game hunter. Frontiersman all of his life. I'm not one for hunting personally, but, you know, you do you, boo. I'm not going to stop you.
Big fan of Cabela's Wild Hunt.
Big game hunter. But Roosevelt was a conservationist. A naturalist, among other things. He created the United States Forest Service. He established an incredible amount of national forest, national game reserves, national parks, federal border reserves, all sorts of shit with the 1906 American Antiquities Act. Well, among those other things I had mentioned, he also wrote a lot of books. Mm-hmm. One being The Wilderness Hunter, an account of the big game of the United States and its chase with horse, hound, and rifle, which was published in 1893 and carries our first story for the show. It retells the account of someone that Teddy supposedly had talked to about what seems to be an encounter with Bigfoot. So Teddy prefaces the story by saying that he has heard a few ghost stories while living on the frontier, and that these few were of a perfectly commonplace and conventional type. I like the open-mindedness.
Yeah.
He also refers to a lot of quote-unquote paranormal stories as quote-unquote goblin stories. I don't know why, but it's kind of cute as fuck when I read it.
That.
He's like, the ghosts and the goblins. And I know what he's referring to, you know, in the context there of goblins. It's about, like, cryptids and other monsters and aberrations, creatures alike. But the story comes to us from a grizzled, weather-beaten old mountain hunter named Bowman. That's all we have, Bowman.
I wonder if you use the bow a lot.
Strike one. Like Teddy, Bowman has been a frontiersman his entire life. Bowman was told about all kinds of ghost and goblin lore when he was growing up. Roosevelt says in one line, and yes, this is one fucking line, quote, he knew well of the stories told by the Indian medicine men in their winter camps of the snowwalkers, specters, and the formless evil beings that haunt the forest depths and dog and waylay the lonely wanderer who, after nightfall, passes through the regions where they lurk. And it may be that when overcome by the horror of the fate that befell his friend, and when oppressed by the awful dread of the unknown, he grew to attribute, both at the time and still more in remembrance, weird and elfin traits to what was merely some abnormally wicked and cunning wild beast. But whether this was so or not, no man can say.
Man.
End quote. One line.
Man, we used to talk so fucking cool, and now we just say words like riz and
facts.
I have no idea what
that's already a normal word,
happening.
But for some reason we just had to make it shortened even more in a sentence form to just facts.
Yeah, it's like I didn't realize until I saw it on TikTok that riz was short for charisma, and I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
What? I had no idea.
Yep.
Sometimes I'm glad that I'm in my 30s. And I just don't think to look into that stuff.
I came across it on TikTok and I was like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I can't say anything. I mean, you know, growing up, said a lot of stupid shit. But
well, what I don't understand is why our class, we thought, you know what? We have the word cool. Let's just change the letters to K-E-W-L and just make it cool.
Yeah.
See, that's the best we could do.
See, I was a skater kid, so I just said gnarly.
Rocket Power taught me that.
Since surfers,
woogity, 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 woogity.
Since surfers kind of like were also skaters, and it just kind of all became.
You're on land. You're on land. There's a magnificent sea beast out there. Grow your fins and explore.
Watch Lords of Dogtown and tell me that they're not.
Shut up.
The same.
I mean, is that what happened? Like, what came first? Surfboard or skateboard?
Surfboards, and then.
And they put wheels on it, and like, oh my God, look at this.
Kind of, basically, yeah.
Okay, well, so what can I put wheels on?
A snowboard.
And it makes what? Another skateboard?
A larger skateboard.
A larger skateboard? Okay, I'm going to figure out what I could put wheels on and make an entirely new invention. How about a home? Oh, wait. Anyway. When this event occurred, Bowman was a young man and was trapping with a partner among the mountains, dividing the forks of the Salmon River, I believe that's in Idaho, and the head of the Wisdom River, which is in Montana. And I think the town of Wisdom, Montana, came from the Wisdom River. And I think it's kind of interesting that the Salmon River is also known as the River of No Return. I'm like, how fitting for this story. Once I get into it, you'll see. But yeah, I think they were trapping beaver.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
The two men, they weren't having much luck and decided to head up to a particularly wild and lonely pass, which had an evil reputation because the year before, a hunter was slain, seemingly by some wild beast. Never found the beast. They don't know. The guy's like, oh, well, you got fucked up. And that was about that.
It was probably from the natives and it was probably deserved.
I'm kind of there with you. I got one foot in that field. So they traveled through the pass on horse as far as they could, then the rest on foot. Eventually, they came to a clearing where they set up camp because the game was plenty. Like, yeah, this should work. After setting up camp, they went a little further to put up the traps, for they only had maybe a few hours of daylight left. Once they made it back to camp around dusk, they noticed that something had just rummaged through their camp. There was stuff thrown about, strewn just everywhere. They're like, what the fuck just happened? Well, after they, you know, reconstructed everything and put it all back to how it was, they found some prints. Carefully examining these prints, Bowman and his partner concluded that this bear seemed to be walking on two legs. For there was only one set of prints distinguishable by two individual prints.
I don't know about you, man, but I don't think bears walk on 2 feet. I mean, I've seen videos they do, but...
I totally forgot to add this in our Bigfoot series, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
But there was a bear that ran through some town. I can't remember where at in the continental U.S., but it had some sort of deformity in one of its front paws, so it only walked on two legs.
Terrifying.
It never walked on four legs, or even three. It was only two legs.
That's just a druid.
It is a druid. Cast wild shape.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, some guy thought, I'm going to kill that fucking thing, and he did.
Of course.
Some hunter did, so he's a fucking asshole.
Uh-huh.
But just, depending.
I mean, I've seen bears ride unicycles, so.
What can they not do?
Exactly.
So the men, of course, a little startled, they went to bed anyway. They were like, yeah, whatever. Well, around midnight, Bowman was awakened by some noise around the camp. His nostrils were immediately hit by a strong odor, and Bowman could make out a quote-unquote vague, threatening shadow.
Ooh.
He grabbed his rifle and fired. It must have missed because the thing immediately ran off after the shot had been fired, smashing through the underwood. That morning, the two set off to look for their traps, and once they returned, again, their camp was ransacked in the same manner. The same tracks were present. Whatever this thing was, entered and left on two legs.
The bear just got scared and he just skedaddled.
I mean,
it was like a Scooby-Doo cartoon where he like jumped up in the air, like ran in place for a little bit.
I mean, what if the bear like stood up on two legs, started running, I don't know, maybe 20 or so feet, and then immediately latched onto a tree and up the tree went.
I could see
it. Maybe they were scared. Although they were thoroughly uneasy at this point, Bowman and his partner gathered some dead logs and kept the fire roaring. I would not. I think I'd be fucking gone. It happened twice in one day. It happened twice. Nope. I think I'd be gone.
Yeah, you know what, guys? I think we're going to call this a day.
But this time, they took turns taking hour shifts, keeping guard. They heard the thing return, but this time on the other side of the brook. It stayed for nearly an hour as the hunters could hear twigs snapping and vegetation being moved through. But the most frightening part was the harsh, grating, long-drawn moan, a peculiar, sinister sound that would emit from time to time. That morning, they decided to leave.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I would also do the same.
The entire time they were heading out of the area, they had the feeling of being watched and possibly even followed. They picked up their traps one by one, not catching a single beaver. No poon for these goons. Around noon, they were only a couple miles away from the... I'm trying to read. You're breaking my character. This isn't spooky anymore, Josh. What are you doing?
Yeah, I was not expecting.
Oh my gosh, Josh. Right. Come on.
Not expecting that.
Around noon, they were only a couple of miles from their original campsite. There were three beaver traps left, and Bowman volunteered to pick them up, while his companion went ahead to camp and made ready the packs, made sure they packed everything up and got ready for when Bowman returned, they could leave. Bowman retrieved the traps with some beaver. Good for him, man. Poke, poke, poke. But quickly became nervous at how quickly the sun was setting. Oh, he's like, holy shit, wait. I didn't know there was 24 hours in a day. I didn't realize the sun followed the same goddamn path every fucking day. Making his way back to camp, he started shouting to his partner, but with no response. Once close enough, he didn't even see a fire lit. He only saw like half the shit packed away. He was like, this fucking lazy son of a bitch. Well then, scanning the site, his eyes eventually fell upon his friend who laid stretched out near the trunk of a tree.
Was he T-posing?
He was not. I don't think so. The body was still warm. I hate that that sentence started like that because I'm like, oh, what are you going to do, buddy?
Doesn't need to heat it for the thighs.
Can you necro feel me?
And if you know, that reference that I just made.
No.
Good for you.
Like, if I don't know?
It was the Avenged Sevenfold song.
What did you even say?
I said, you know, you don't need the heater for the thighs.
What song is that, by the way?
It's the fucking one, like, 7 minute song they did.
A Piece of Heaven or Slice of Heaven or something?
Yeah, Piece of Heaven, that's it. Yeah, Piece of Heaven.
Love that song. Anyway.
I bet you do, weirdo.
But the body was still warm, but the neck was broken. There were four. Count them, four.
Marshmallows.
Huge fang marks. In his neck, and the footprints of the unknown creature littered throughout the area.
It was a vampire.
A vamp squatch or a sassire.
Could you fucking imagine?
Look at me inventing stuff. Fucking, just put wheels on and I'm good to go, buddy.
Fucking vamp squatch.
A vamp squatch. I hate it. I don't need my winged demonoid blood-sucking creatures to be covered in hair.
Maybe that's what Bat Squatch came from.
Oh, yeah, that does exist. I'm sure there's 1,000 people going, Bat Squatch, you sons of bitches, Bat Squatch. And we're over here not thinking that.
Bat Squatch, but when he finally like transforms, it's just a vampire squatch.
Does he sleep in a coffin? Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah? But it has to be naturally made. Like he just put a bunch. Maybe that's what his little structures are.
Oh, my
they're
God.
They're like his sleep. I mean, they're supposed to be like beds so.
I think we're coming up with something.
We're going to write a book like everybody fucking does.
Yep.
Anyway, Bowman was terrified. He didn't know if this half-human, half-devil, whatever creature was around the corner or what was going on. But he abandoned everything but his rifle, got on his horse, and fucking left beyond the reach of pursuit. And that's that story.
Left his friend.
Dead. I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Who's the guy that died? I need to know about that. But what I do like about this is the book, published in 1893, if the story is to be believed in the sense that Bowman was a real person, had this real story, and told Teddy, he said, what, 1893 is published, so maybe he heard the story a year or two prior before he put it in his book. We'll go with that. And then Bowman said when he was younger. So let's say if he's an old, grizzled, hairy, whatever man, let's take another 40 years on that or something like that. So let's say 1852. Well, like the 1930s is when we hear about the anglicization of, you know, the Salish Sasquatch word of hairy man, wild man. Mm-hmm. 1958 in the Humboldt Times is when we hear about Bigfoot. So here we have a story that almost predates at least the term Bigfoot by like 100 years. But people associate the hoax of Bigfoot within the 1950s. They think it goes no further back than that. Well, maybe it does.
Go ask the indigenous people because they got plenty of stories.
And we have Teddy Roosevelt to thank for part of that.
Yep.
So now moving on to Teddy Roosevelt's dealings with the Snallygaster.
Yeah. But Matt, what is the Snallygaster?
Well, the Snallygaster is a fucking abomination. I don't know. It's half reptile. It's half bird. Some say it has a metallic beak, razor sharp teeth, tentacles. Sometimes the tentacles are portrayed around the beak, around the mouth area. Sometimes it's just all over the body. I mean, this thing is the most cosmic horror Lovecraftian thing I can think of in the world of cryptozoology.
Yeah.
I mean, just imagine some big raptor, you know, some bird, give it tentacles all over its body, increase the size, so I don't know, 25 feet tall, maybe a wingspan of 35, 40 feet. I don't know. It flies. It has one eye. It makes a whistling sound like that of a train. But the thing with the Snallygaster is, obviously, we don't know if it ever existed or not.
It is in Fallout 76, but it looks completely different.
Which really pisses me off, honestly. I don't know why Bethesda thought to take that route.
Uh-huh.
But the Snallygaster, like many other creatures, seem to come up in some sort of, if you want to use the term sensationalized, you can, but newspaper reports. But it caught the attention. It spread like wildfire amongst, you know, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, especially Maryland. That's where, I don't know if it's most of the stories or the most prominent tale of the Snallygaster comes from. That's why the American Snallygaster Museum is there. That's why Sarah Cooper made it there.
Yeah.
Frederick County. But the Snallygaster, the tales of it was brought over from German immigrants that came into like Maryland and such. And I forget the German word for it. Once we do the Snallygaster episode, we will explain a lot more of this. But whatever that word might be, which Josh is going to look up right now, means, I believe, quick spirit.
Schnellergeist. Or quick spirit.
Quick spirit, yeah. Yeah.
Schnellergeist.
I wish we kept that. It's pretty fun. I like Schnellergeist.
Yeah, Schnellergeist is very fun.
Schnellergeist. Put some wheels on that. So, you have a rough idea of what this abhorrent thing looked like. I don't know. It's fucking weird.
There's also a spelling of it, Snollygoster.
Oh, yeah.
Never seen that. That's interesting.
But these newspaper reports, you know, they talked about how this thing would pick up and eat cattle, pick up and eat men and shit like that. There was a tale, I think, about it laying an egg, all this weird stuff. We don't have any verifiable proof for it, but nonetheless, it's there. Anyway, my point being with the Teddy Roosevelt connection, since he was such an avid hunter, like I'd spoken on before, it caught his attention. You know, it ran through his ears since so many states were up in arms about it. I mean, at this time, you also have the Van Meter Visitor years before.
Oh, yeah.
The Jersey Devil.
Go listen to that in our archive.
Exactly. I love that episode. So yeah, it was, you know what? And now that I'm thinking about it, no, cause this was the last one. I don't know. Since I wonder if these things were created because of Teddy Roosevelt's fascination with conservation, with natural history, with taxidermy, with hunting in general about these creatures. And that's why like all these cryptids seem to spring up at the exact same time.
Could be.
Anyway, in 1909, Teddy planned a safari. And now there is evidence of the trip. Him and his son Kermit went over there. And there is this list that I have found of 512 animals that they hunted Yeah, exactly. And each one had about 200 and like 50, 60, something like that. But obviously, I don't like the way they went about it. But as Teddy describes and how other people that tell his story describe, he did it because he liked the history of it. He wanted to understand these creatures. Just about anything and everything he killed, minus some of the better, I guess, you know, trophies that he kept for himself, went to the Smithsonian. Smithsonian for like Teddy Roosevelt African Safari Expedition, okay. Whatever. So like, there's some kind of like, okay, that's interesting, cool, I guess, sort of. But around this time, he had spoken about wanting to go and hunt the Snallygasser, and there were people and news publications and sorts like that that said that he canceled his safari trip in order to go hunt the Snallygasser.
Teddy Roosevelt, the first Witcher.
Oh, I love it. Now, the fact that it was something that he could hunt, and that he said that he would want to hunt and put in the Smithsonian for historic educational purposes, maybe the fact that the Smithsonian thought, you know what, let's do a $100,000 reward to anybody who could hunt and kill it. Maybe that had some persuading effects as well. National Geographic was also preparing an expedition, supposedly, to capture it on film. But like you said, if I had a movie, maybe in a game, where you play as Teddy Roosevelt as a cryptid hunter,
dude,
that would be
that just needs to be a comic book.
That would be so fucking cool. I imagine coming across that in the middle of some forest and the tentacles are grabbing these men and fucking ripping them apart, throwing them and staking them on trees. I imagine Teddy is just a calm and collected guy, just kind of like, all right, you snally gasser, going to be a snally bastard. And
all right, there's a lot of indie game creators out there, especially on Steam.
Oh, yeah.
Feel free.
Pal World, baby.
To take this idea, make this a thing, and tag us because I want to play this game.
I would absolutely love it to be Teddy Roosevelt and to hunt and kill the Snallygasser.
Just Teddy Roosevelt hunting cryptids? Like, calm the fuck on. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, being the most powerful person in the world, they can do almost anything they want legally.
Unless you believe in the shadow government.
Well, illegally as well, too. But I'm like, you know what? While I don't see any evidence supporting this, I could see him easily having somebody else go on that safari trip and taking himself and maybe a few others to go into the deep woods of Maryland or so and hunt the Snallygasser. Or who knows, maybe he did the expedition and then immediately came back, or right before it, he went out there to go hunt it.
Sorry, I'm struggling. My pop tab caught one of my mustache hairs and
ooh, ow.
Pulled it out.
Oh, I get it.
The worst.
Well, I saw you in pain. I was like, I gotta give him a minute.
Yeah, I felt it, and I pulled the can down, and I heard like the pop, and I was like, ah.
Now you're terrified to drink it.
Why do you betray me?
It's
like getting your extra wiener hair caught in the zipper.
I like how you had to say your extra wiener hair.
I technically meant skin, extra? But I don't know why.
Now I'm gonna leave you, little buddy. gonna keep you around. Make room for you. You're an extra wiener hair. It's called a pube, Josh. God damn. Anyway, that's the only real like little excerpt about Teddy Roosevelt and the Snallygasser. There's no real story to it. But the fact that he knew of it, took interest in it, even if it was like, you know what, I would sure like to hunt and kill that. Even if he never did. Even if he never explored it in any way. The thought that he had the thought, I think, is cool enough to share in this episode.
We should make this. This needs to be a graphic novel. Teddy Roosevelt, the monster hunter. We already have Abraham Lincoln, fucking vampire killer, hunter, or what the
and
fuck
that's
ever.
That's fucking awesome.
So why not use Teddy Roosevelt?
You know what? Not that it's a graphic novel by any means. But again, Sarah, you, yeah, Cooper, American Snallygasser Museum. She does have a print you can buy of Teddy with his foot on the Snallygasser after he's killed it. And I'm like, man, I would love to have that. Whether it's hanging up on my wall or if it's a t-shirt, oh, I would fucking kill for that. Sarah, please. So now we're going to move on to the next story, and this is about Lincoln's ghost.
Whoa.
Who's Lincoln?
Lincoln was a wrestling fan.
Was he really?
Yep.
Did he ever wrestle? Probably. I wouldn't be surprised. Probably. He was 6'4". He was 7'8" with that hat.
But yeah, he was a notorious wrestling fan.
Well, that's
like, obviously,
cool.
Back then, it was like the traditional like Greco-Roman like
yeah.
wrestling, but still, kind of cool.
Yeah, interesting. So of all the ghosts that supposedly haunt the White House, the most famous has got to be that of Abraham Lincoln. Honest Abe is apparently a rather sedentary ghost, as Grace Coolidge, the wife of President Calvin Coolidge, said that she saw Lincoln simply looking out the window of what had been his office one time.
And I will say,
okay,
if you look at Abe Lincoln, yeah, like pictures of him,
yeah,
he's a very, very unique looking individual.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you see a lot of people that, like, look somewhat similar to, like, other celebrities and stuff like that. But Abe Lincoln, you never really see anybody that looks like him.
You're right. I mean, I'm sure if I try hard enough, I probably can. But you're right. Just in passing, at least.
Yeah. He's a very...
I do that every day.
Very, very unique.
Stern. He is. Yeah. He is a unique looking individual.
But what I was kind of getting at with that is, like, if you see, like, if she saw a ghost, there's that, it's really hard to, like... guess a normal human ghost of Pete confused with the ghost of
Pete Davidson
Abe Lincoln. Yes.
Yeah. Pete Davidson looks just like Abraham Lincoln, doesn't he? No, but you're right. You're right. I get that. He was also seen putting on his boots by Mary Eben, who caught him during her employment under Eleanor Roosevelt. Winston Churchill, staying over during World War II, got out of the bath when he spied Lincoln sitting in a chair by his fireplace, and he apparently is reputed to have said, quote, "Good evening, Mr. President. I'm afraid you have met me at a disadvantage," because he got out of the bath with that perfectly shaped Zoidberg-looking body, I'm sure.
Was Winston Churchill the guy, the...
No.
There was a big president that had
it's,
to get...
It's Taft.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
It's, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Taft.
You saying Taft makes way more sense. I remember learning that in elementary school. I'm like, oh, so the president was so big he had to have a custom Tubman. Why am I learning this?
Yeah, exactly. Why do I need to know? How is this going to help me in the future? Fast forward about 17 years and you're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with Regis Philbin. The million-dollar question, who was stuck in a bathtub in the White House? You're like, holy shit, it came true.
Yeah.
Use phone a friend. Call your old teacher.
You stupid bitch. Like all my math teachers who told me I wouldn't have a calculator in my pocket.
Well,
joke's on you.
Yeah. They're still reaming that to this day, I'm sure. But the oddest person to have seen Lincoln's ghost has to be Lincoln himself. I know. What? There have long been stories surrounding Lincoln's death, and one apocryphal example is that Lincoln supposedly dreamed of a president dying shortly before his own assassination.
Oh, that's...
like a premonition.
Terrifying. Some Final Destination shit.
Yeah, exactly. In the dream, Lincoln is reported to have seen soldiers gathered around a casket, and when he asked who died, they answered, "The president. He was killed by an assassin."
Oh, man. Hey, guys. Who died? Who's in the casket? You.
Everyone just starts fucking freaking out. Arguably, though, stranger was a vision that Lincoln shared with his wife, Mary Todd, about seeing overlapping reflections of himself in a single mirror on the day that he won his first election. Having laid down on a chaise, or a chaise, whatever floats your boat there, Lincoln caught the image of himself and his doppelganger in the swinging mirror on the bureau. On their bureau, excuse me. When he got up, the image went away, but when he would lay back down, it came back. He saw the ghoul one more time, but afterwards couldn't get the double reflection to happen again, even when he was trying to show Mary. She took it as a sign that he would be elected twice, but killed while in office.
Okay, fucking Mary, calm your shit.
Well, I wonder if she said, if she really did say that. I don't know.
Fuck it.
But I
says it jokingly, like 5 years later, she's like, oh, my bad.
But I put it in here because many of the articles that I read about this subject say that. That she declared, basically, that you will be elected twice due to that. Because she was, you know, a little 14 herself. But I wonder if the seeing himself doppelganger effect, her saying that you'll be killed in office, we know what doppelgangers are. If you see your doppelganger, it means you will die.
So what was he seeing his doppelganger in?
A mirror.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought. And I was just like, but...
No, yeah.
So he was seeing himself in a mirror and he was getting freaked out, but then all of a sudden...
Isn't that what you do in a mirror, though?
But then all of a sudden he couldn't get it to appear again?
Yes. Yeah, so he caught the image of himself.
So he turned into a vampire.
So here's the thing. What? No, he's not a vampire.
But you... Okay, he was seeing himself in a mirror and then all of a sudden...
Did he turn into a vampire?
See the reflection again?
So he saw himself and his reflection.
Oh, so it's like the fucking mirror from Harry Potter where he sees himself and then like another thing behind him.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. We can go with that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. He saw himself and another one of him.
Okay. 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 Okay.
So I'm sure some people are like, well, don't you normally just see yourself in a mirror?
That's where I was confused. That's why I was like, when you were like telling the story, I was like, so he was looking in a mirror and he was like, oh, there's somebody else in the mirror. He looks just like me.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was something behind him that was slightly reflective, in which that mirror
it was another mirror, and he was just like,
no. I mean, it could be like really polished marble, okay? Yeah. And it could have had another one of him behind him reflecting off of the mirror he was originally looking at.
They had like one of the like fucking statues already made of him, and he's just sitting, he's just like,
oh my god,
what is that?
But that's the case of it. He sees him and another him, but that's when he's lying down, and then he gets back up, when he's laying down, he saw it. He got up, it was gone. He probably just literally stood above the mirror and was like, "Oh, it's gone now. What the hell?" And then just sat back down. But Mary Todd,
Lincoln, you know what? It was in the olden days. They weren't the brightest.
That's right, because there wasn't any light bulbs.
When was the light bulb invented?
Probably at that time. It says 1850. I mean, we're literally right around that time. Yeah. Assassination of Abraham Lincoln. I got typed in Lincoln's ass. Just to make sure. 1865. So 15 years earlier. So probably they had light at that time, I imagine. I'm not sure exactly when this was that he saw his doppelganger, but...
Define Lincoln assassination. You just have to look up Lincoln ass.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Like how, if you want to find us on Spotify, you just type in the fart. I mean, that's just how...
We are the fart.
I mean, that's just how spelling works. I get it. But I find it humorous.
So yeah, moving on now. Last but not least for Lincoln's ghost and, you know, a few others. His wife, Mary Todd Lincoln, she actually conducted seances in the White House.
She's the witch.
The bloodiest conflict in our nation's history. All right, I want people to understand this. Is the American Civil War.
Uh-huh.
1861, 1865, 4 years of just absolute bloodshed.
And if you listen to our episode going way, 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 way back where we tell our own paranormal tales, I tell the story about when me and my dad went to Gettysburg.
Boom.
And we caught the phantom smell.
Boom.
One of the battlefields.
Now, understand this. The Civil War resulted in, you know, I hear 500, 600, upwards of 800,000-900,000 deaths. So we're going to go about middle of the road, and I do see this number come up, but we're going to go about 750,000 deaths, which is very close to the confirmed number, or most expected to be confirmed number. That number nearly equals the total number of American deaths in the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korean War. All those wars combined still do not even add up to the amount of casualties that the American Civil War happened to produce. And I say that because we've said this on past episodes, and I'm sure we're going to continue speaking on this throughout the course of this show's life. But spiritualism resurges when shit like this happens.
Yep.
Like after each and every single war, people want to communicate for, you know, lack of a better try at describing this. They want to communicate with their loved ones that have now passed. So everyone starts getting into spiritualism. Seances and, you know, with psychics and mediums and fortune tellers and stuff like that to try and just rekindle what once was. But never has our nation experienced death like this.
Nope.
She, Mary Todd Lincoln, first turned to spiritualism as a tool for processing her grief after the death of her second youngest son, William, or as they call him, Willie. And that took place in February of 1862. Shortly after Willie's death, she was introduced to the Lorys, a well-known group of mediums that were located in Georgetown in Washington, D.C. Mrs. Lincoln found such comfort from the seances held by the group that she started hosting her own seances in the Red Room of the White House. There is evidence to suggest that she hosted as many as 8 seances in the White House and that her husband was even in attendance for a few of them. And I do believe that means, like, literally there. I know she tried to do a few seances in order to contact her late husband, Honest Abe, but sometimes he was actually there in person to just see what was going on. So they shared this liking of spiritualism and the thought of life after death. And then in 1870, Mary Lincoln secretly visited William H. Mumler, a self-proclaimed spirit photographer who, despite the fact, was accused of fraud. She requested to be photographed with her late husband. And there is a photograph here. And I will show it to you, Josh. And you can tell me if you think it's real or not.
Whoa. That's
fake.
Overexposure. Double exposure. However, photography worked back in those days.
You had to stand for half an hour without breathing, without blinking, without eating, without shitting, or anything. Wait for the brightest light you've ever seen to go off, and then you're fine. Now, we can sit here and we can poke fun about this photo all we want. It's not the worst photo I've seen, I'll give you that. But, however, we hope that Mary Todd found some solace in this and enjoyed it. But, besides Lincoln's ghost, there have been other ghosts that have been known to roam the White House. Harry Truman said that he knew the White House was just chock full of ghosts because he wrote about it in his letters to his wife, Bess. In one, he claimed to have seen the drapes blowing about in the Oval House. I know, it's crazy. And he was thinking, hey, I think Theodore Roosevelt and Andrew Jackson are over there arguing. I don't know why. That's just what he said.
Bunch of blowhards.
More like Harry Fakeman. Take that, you sick son of a bitch. Another time,
I'm just gonna let you go.
Another time, he heard three knocks at his bedroom door and investigated it. But he didn't find anything. But he was so kind of spooked about it, he decided to go ask the Secret Service about it and have them look into it.
Go check that out.
And they informed him nobody had been up in the living area at that time.
Nobody knows.
And then they were like, we'll walk you back to bed, Truman. Did you take your pills?
We'll tuck you in.
Truman was informed that all the ghostly noises he had been hearing in the White House over the years were just construction falling apart. And so actually, in his second term, he spent 3 years living nearby while the building was renovated. A possible explanation, but who knows, maybe not. Ooh.
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 Ah. Ooh, ooh.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. There are also lesser-known spirits, like a white-haired old man that disturbed President Chester Arthur at night. A beautiful maiden in a flowing white dress sighted in the old conservatory, and the unidentified, invisible, child-sized boy ghost called The Thing that greatly frightened the Taft residence staff in 1911. This entity went around grabbing the maids and butlers. The situation got so bad that Taft put a military aide on the trail, and this motherfucker's name is Archibald Butt. I'm not also, kidding.
Just the term boy ghost, I'm like, ooh, don't like that.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. It just makes me uncomfortable.
I think the more so the fact that it's a child. Well, it says child size. That's kind of weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I more freaked out saying the ghost is child size or the ghost is a child?
Children are terrifying.
They are.
And you know what's more terrifying?
But me being my height, you scare me.
That's fine because you tall fuckers scare me.
No.
What are you doing up there?
The feeling's mutual. The sun hits my back and takes all the heat from you.
I know, yeah. How the fuck am I supposed to photosynthesize?
I'm sorry. I'll stay out of your way.
Yeah, you fucking better. Anyways, you know what's terrifying about children? If you hear their laughter in the middle of the night and you can't find them, terrifying. My neighbors.
I'm about to say, have you experienced this?
My neighbors' kids, like a couple weeks ago, I guess they were outside. Like,
camping. No thanks.
And like, I'm just in my room and I just keep hearing like laughter. And I'm like, what the fuck? And like, I would like look out my window, not see anything. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And then they turned on like their back porch light and I could finally see like the tent in the backyard. And I was like, oh, thank God. Cause I was about to fucking just move.
So interestingly enough, about ghosts. No, get this. I just remember this and I talked to this gentleman. I was like, hey, can I like talk a little bit about the story? Because this is actually pretty crazy. But then the resolution came days later. And I was like, wow, what a crazy story of something that happened that kind of freaked you out. But then you find out what really went on. Like the whole thing came together. I was like, wow, neat. So let me just get to it without talking about this stupid vague shit. I have Apollo come and check my HVAC all the time. I have a...
The god?
Yeah, who else?
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Cool.
And he shows up. He's he's quite the character, I must say. But he and his wife experience a lot of weird shit. He never really experienced it himself until he moved in and started living with his wife. His wife says that she can kind of like almost not necessarily communicate, but has the mediumship abilities of feeling when presences are near and such. Mm-hmm. And he's telling me all these weird things that have happened. He's showed me a couple videos. The one I liked most was a video of his living room slash kind of like kitchen bar area. And there is literally a blurred out what looks to be like upper half of the torso and head just in one place behind his bar. I mean, it literally looked like a normal living room setting, but part of like the blinds and part of the kitchen is just blurred in the shape of a human.
Don't like that.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of fucked up. And while he's telling me this, I have window, like I have lights that go around the window in my living room. They just go off, just off. I had to go turn it back on. While we're talking, while we continue talking, I have a hand towel that hangs up on the wall in my kitchen, and it just fell. But it has fallen before. But the fact that it had fallen with him there, I was like, this is kind of
funny.
Get out
of my house.
This is kind of weird and funny. But he said stuff like that would happen to him now, the fact that he's introduced to his wife. I later find out that, yeah, the towel does that. But when he came to work on the HVAC, he had to turn the heat off. And my wife was upstairs getting cold. And so she turned the heat back on or wanted to turn the heat back on and accidentally hit the wrong switch and turned the lights out around the window and didn't want to turn it back on and make the situation any weirder. So I was like, the fact that it came around full circle is actually kind of cool. But the fact that it played so well, I was like, this has to be some of the stuff we look into. This is how it happens. That one in a million situation is how this panned out.
100%. Like, there used to be a street light when we were in high school, and like, you know, we'd all go to like the football games and stuff, and I'd skateboard home after the games. There was a fucking street light that almost every fucking time I would walk under it, it would turn out.
Yeah.
And I'm
that's another phenomenon that people like look more into is why do streetlights pass or go off when I pass underneath them?
Yeah, and apparently it has something to do with like, I don't know, electrons and shit, but I'm like, but why me?
Put a wheel on a lamppost. Put wheels on a lamppost. I'm not sure what you do with that.
That's just a movable spotlight. Those already exist.
But not like a lamppost. You could just put that on any street corner that's dark and leave it there.
I miss the days of playing outside and street lights indicating when you got to come home.
We can still do that.
We could. But then... But if we're grown adults and we're doing it, it looks... Well, I guess...
Amongst people that are like 15?
I mean, I get exactly. But I guess if somebody sees me outside, they'll be like, oh, look at that little kid.
He's got a full beard.
Just having the time of his life.
So, let's move on to the next story. Florence Harding, First Lady to President Warren G. Harding.
That's a president I forgot about.
Well, Florence was crazy about the occult. From some sources even saying that she didn't start her day unless she first read her horoscope. Which, I mean, many people do that now. Perhaps back then it was a little more weird, strange. But that's not the craziest thing I've heard. But as we've mentioned before on the show, spiritualism had a huge resurgence after times of war.
Yep.
Always does. And so... especially after World War I, is where this story is taking place with Warren G. Harding, with Florence, and some other people, such as Madame Marcia Champney.
Man, if anybody has Madame in their title, trust them.
It's a trend, I feel like, amongst fortune tellers and psychics. I mean, to be Madame, or just even Madame. Mm-hmm. I mean, you pronounce it however you would like.
Like Madame Leone?
Yeah.
Trusting.
Oh, absolutely, of course. Apparently, her full name is Grace A. Madame Marcia, or Madame Marcia, Beswick Champney. Quite a lot of names there. Well, who was Champney? Champney was a clairvoyant and astrologer to Florence Harding. Florence, and as it's described, again, amongst many articles that I've read, quote-unquote, four other political wives attended some of these sessions with Champney. Which I find funny because it goes on to say Florence was trying to keep this a secret. She didn't want anybody to know, even though she's the only name we know.
Yeah.
the other four political wives, I don't know who they are, and I'm sure they didn't give a fuck.
Also, I'm pretty sure I said Madame Leroni. It's Madame Zeroni from Holes. Fuck that up.
That also sounds like an Italian dish. Zeroni? Sounds like some pizza bagel.
Ooh, it does.
I know, man. Yeah, give me some Italian. Mario Andretti, if you're out there. Gotta go fast. So, yeah. Florence Harding and four other political wives would go see Champney about, who knows, whatever floats their boat, I guess, whatever's on their mind. Well, one of these sessions, what was on Florence's mind, was she asked about a man. What can you tell me about a man that was born on November 2nd, 1865 at 2 p.m.?
God, I want to Google that.
It's the president. It's literally Warren G. Harding.
Will that come up?
No, I don't know if that will come up, but no, that's what exactly she's referring to, because that's her husband. That's literally her husband at this time.
We're testing this. What did you ask? What can...
tell me about a man, or how about just put a man, born on November 2nd, 1865 at 2 p.m.
What comes up?
Whoa! Warren G. Harding?
Actually does.
Exactly.
What the fuck is his middle name? Gamaliel?
Gubernatorial?
Dude, G-A-M-A-L-I-E-L? Gamaliel?
He's a demon. That's a fucking name of a demon.
What kind of fucking Lord of the Rings bullshit name is that?
He controlled the legions of hell.
Jesus. Anyways, that's kind of fun that pops up. Anyways, go ahead.
Well, she asked about that, and...
This witch bitch was using Google.
Yes. Yes. Well, Champney came back with that. That is someone who... Sounds like they would be a great statesman. Oh. Sounds like they would be fit for president. However, he would also have numerous affairs and suffer from melancholia.
Wow, okay.
But like I said, they were literally married at this time. This was in, I think, 1920. His presidency literally starts in 1921. So he's probably actively running a presidential campaign. So this knowledge is out there for them to know. Nothing secret about it, but... For whatever reason, Florence was like, wow, she got it. I don't know how you wouldn't.
Well, listen, back in the day, people were easily confused.
They still are. Let's be fucking real.
You're not wrong. It's going to be just a matter of time until there's a hologram of Jesus in the sky. People are going to be like, oh my God, he's back.
Yep, exactly. But Warren G. Harding was president from 1921 until his death in 1923, which his death was also something predicted by Madame Marcia. She said that Harding would die a sudden, violent, and peculiar death by poison.
Wow.
During a 1923 trip to Alaska, President Harding fell ill after eating crab meat and was treated by Charles Doc, in quotations, Sawyer. Is that supposed to be a nickname? Like, is your nickname your profession? Yeah, what's up? I'm Matthew Vending Route Driver Plunkett. Like, what? Why else would he be named Doc? Especially how it's used.
If somebody's nicknamed Doc and they're not a doctor, not trusting them.
Doc Holliday.
Shit.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Well, he's doing it. He's, whoa. That was the biggest huff and puffing I've ever seen. But yeah, I guess, yeah, your nickname is just your profession back then. I don't know. Yeah, I'm Warren G. motherfucking President Harding, I guess. I don't know.
The Prez.
But the reason why Charles Doc Sawyer was chosen was because Florence had been going to him for years because she believed in homeopathy.
What you call me?
Which Sawyer used to treat patients. Now, what is homeopathy? Some of you probably know. Not everyone, I imagine. Homeopathy is the treatment of disease by minute doses of natural substances that in a healthy person would produce symptoms of disease. So for instance, if you have a cold, runny nose, watery, irritating eyes, a homeopath might suggest Allium Sepa. This remedy is made from red onion, which can cause the similar symptoms. But the idea is that the remedy is so diluted that when you would ingest it or inhale it, however it would be taken, the body's natural defenses would kick in and relieve the old symptoms that you have to, you know, stimulate the body's vital healing force, if you will. It's pseudoscience.
Okay.
Even till today, it is pseudoscience. Like I said, though, surprisingly enough, Madame Marcia called it. Harding died from poisoning. And I gotta say, I would really fucking hate to be that chef at that time who just served the president's last fucking meal. You get home, your wife Doris is like, hey, honey, how was your day? Well, you know what? I lost my keys, couldn't take the car, so I had to walk to work. My foot stepped in a puddle, and I was wet all day. But guess what? Here's the kicker. I killed the fucking president. How do you think my day is going?
I think she would be amazed that they even had cars back then.
I'm talking 1920, dude.
Yeah, I guess. Well, there's still, I guess most people had cars, probably. I'll be honest, I forgot what you were talking.
A chef in Alaska might not. They have a snowmobile.
Yeah, those Huskies.
They just have, I guess, trash can lids to slide
down the
hill. I'm
pretty sure in 1920s, they definitely didn't have snowmobiles.
No, no, they didn't. But we're not done just yet, okay? At least with Madame Marcia, which I really don't know if it's Madame or Madame, or if it really matters.
I say we just keep going with Madame because it sounds more spooky.
It does. So now we're going to hear a little bit from Harry Houdini.
Ooh.
Which, that has to be a name I imagine everyone's heard.
If it is not, you need to stop living under a rock and do some research.
Yeah, escape from that small bumfuck town that you originated from, just like Harry Houdini would, and learn.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, the pinnacle of an illusionist, of an escapologist.
Yeah.
Which I did not make up. It is a word.
If it wasn't for Harry Houdini, fucking Chris Angel wouldn't exist.
My freak. Sponsor us. So we've all probably heard of Houdini, but what we haven't heard, and I didn't even know this until I was looking into the whole President's Day special here, is that in 1926, Houdini testified before Congress with his bill, House Resolution 8989, a bill to impose a fine on fraudulent fortune tellers in the District of Columbia.
Oh, man, it would have been funny if it was 6969.
To hopefully also possibly ban the use of clairvoyants, psychics, mediums, and the like. And he didn't, from what I can understand, he was a pretty reasonable guy. He believed a little bit in spiritualism. He believed a little bit in life after death. But what he didn't like, you know, he didn't care if you and your neighbor went out back and they read you a fortune, whatever. But the fact that these clairvoyants, the psychics, the mediums were riddled throughout the government, literally making decisions for people in power to guide whatever course the U.S. was going down, that was a little bit frightening to him. It was a threat to democracy in his eyes. And while I'm not the patriot that I feel like I'm making Harry Houdini sound like, I can kind of understand a little bit where he's coming from.
Yeah.
Because I'm not just going to look up at the stars for Virgo and then tell you who to bomb next. That's just not how this is going to work. But during these congressional hearings, it seems that they were, it was pretty theatrical, because Harry produced at one instance a telegram inside a sealed envelope asking anyone to guess what's inside. Guess what? Nobody did. He even showed up with a legit 50-foot-long scroll, and detailed on this scroll were all the people he could find that were a clairvoyant, a medium or so, that were aiding government officials about stuff that they probably shouldn't be aided in. It even had a quote-unquote sucker list of people that have been conned by these people.
Bet Bill Clinton had one of those.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, he just didn't like how the government, or at least the officials that were involved, were relying on, you know, mysticism, mediumship, you know, the pseudoscience, if you will, for national matters. He sent an undercover investigator, Rose Mackenberg, to comb Washington's underbelly for mediums. And, of course, they definitely found plenty of them.
I bet that's really gross to comb.
Yeah. It probably is. That sounds like a disgusting job for some reason.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, literally or figuratively, but it sounds disgusting either way.
It does. And I'm really sad that I visualized that.
Thanks a lot. And now everyone else is going to visualize it too.
Listen, if I have
so
to suffer.
So crusty and greasy and just.
It's probably like fucking just crumbs of food.
You ever seen that SpongeBob episode about that Krabby Patty that fell like underneath the fryer forever?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that.
It's got the eye. And,
it's like that. It's all black and blue.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, everybody. But if you if I have to suffer, you have to suffer with me.
Yeah, absolutely. That is part
sharing
of the
caring.
That is part of the telepathic contract that you sign whenever you click on an episode to play in here.
Yep.
Yeah, you just don't know it. Madame Marcia was among the many psychics and spiritualist mediums and fortune tellers, astrologers, whatever, that attended these hearings. At one point, Houdini even held up another envelope, but this one had $10,000 inside of it.
Whoa,
in 1920. $10,000 inside of it to
of money.
anyone in this room, clairvoyant or not, that could produce a single verifiable piece of psychic phenomenon.
You know what I get? And you know what I bet? He didn't actually have that money in that envelope.
Maybe not.
If somebody would have stood up and like actually said it, he would have been like, shit.
That, or that would have been the perfect reason for someone to try and produce it, be given the envelope, and then see that there was no money in it to begin with.
Just an IOU note.
And then he'd be like, how did you not know that I didn't have money in there?
Man.
That would have been a trick.
Man, being like a psychic, like a psychic medium, is got to be the funnest job, because you created a profession on being a con artist.
Pretty much. Now, we've said this before too. We know a lot of people, you know, find comfort in that. And like, I do what you want. But for us, that's not how we roll.
You are the people that easily get scammed during phone calls.
Unfortunately, I believe so, yes. But Madame Marcia was there. He held up the envelope. She stood up, claiming the money was hers, because she accurately predicted Harding's election and death. But for her, there's no proof. Saying you predicted that is not showing that you actually predicted. Like, how did you do it?
Makes it seem like she killed him.
Unfortunately, though, for Houdini, it wasn't proof that she didn't. It's just kind of a lot of, I did this, I did that, hearsay, whatever. So at this point, the testimony...
bunch of he said, she said bullshit.
Yeah. Let's bring Fred Durst back into this. But at this point, though, the testimony from both sides just became pure speculation. Congress declined to outlaw what the followers claimed as a religious practice. And you know what? Smart on them for doing so.
Yep.
But right before any of that went down, Madame Marcia made one other prediction, that Houdini would be dead by November of that year. And on October 31st of 1926, Harry Houdini was dead. You'll see that his death was quote-unquote mysterious, but there's a lot of talk about appendicitis, which the magician did have, and he dealt with it for a number of days, literally refusing treatment. He wanted to go do his shows. He was his stomach was in pain. There was one show that he collapsed right after. I mean, he was very stupid to do that, but that's just what he did. There was even an instance in Montreal, I think, where a student named J. Gordon Whitehead punched Houdini because Houdini claimed that his physique, his endurance, yada, 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 was just so almost on a supernatural level, he could take any hit. You know what? But the thing is he would prepare for that, and then people would, you know, punch him all day long, and he would seemingly not be tired. He'd be absolutely fine. Well, J. Gordon was like, hey, what's going on? Bam! A couple times in the stomach. Houdini didn't have much time to prepare. I imagine he showed some anguish there, like, that hurt. That
probably.
Hurt a lot.
You think the guy probably told him, like, you better let that shit slip. You're going to be leaving with a fat lip.
I'm like a chainsaw. I'll skin your ass raw. Oh, and hey, with my invention that I'm trying to put wheels on, just keep rolling, rolling, rolling. All right? Don't forget that. But the thing is I believe, and many others, that those punches probably really aggravated his appendicitis. And when he was finally taken to the...
Probably.
Yeah. When he was finally taken to the hospital, surgery was performed. The appendix absolutely did rupture days before, and they took it all out. But it had been in there for so long, after it ruptured, it had poisoned his insides. And his wife, you know, Bess, was there with him on his deathbed. And he lasted another number of days until October 31st, 1926, when he died. Afterwards.
It's just fucked up how many things inside your body want to kill you.
Absolutely. After that, Bess tried seances to contact her husband, who even said when he died, he would do all that he could to communicate with her.
I can escape these chains. I'll talk to you in the afterlife.
After 10 years of receiving no communication whatsoever from Harry, she gave up. But his scientific thought process, his skeptical thinking, clearly Bess Houdini shared it.
Houdini's just up in heaven like, dude, I gotta get through the gate. I gotta fucking make contact. She's gonna think I'm a liar.
Yeah, she's gonna find another man. Can't escape heaven, Houdini. This feels like hell. What'd you say? Nothing. Satan's just down there with his finger like, come on. Come on, buddy. So now we will move on to our final story for the evening. And we're going to talk about the Reagans.
Oh, shit.
Reagan smash. Reagan smash. Reagan sleepy. Oh, God. I love it. So what many people, I'm sure, don't realize, and honestly, I didn't, and I guarantee you didn't either, because you're fucking stupid. What's that?
He was talking to me, not the listener. I want to clarify that. I want to clarify that. He pointed at me, not the listener.
Couldn't help it. Blunt and straightforward. That was just funny to me. Was that many of President Reagan's speeches over the course of his presidency.
He could talk.
Surprisingly. I know. Yeah, it's a two-parter. It is surprising that he can talk in the first place, but what he talked about, not completely verbatim, but it was the works of occultist Manly P. Hall. Are you fucking laughing because I said P?
Just the name in general is ridiculous.
Well, if you remember, and maybe I can jog this memory, if not, is Manly P. Hall came up in still our most popular episode to date of Count of Saint Germain. In 1944, Manly P. Hall wrote The Secret Destiny of America that described a secret philosophical order that was working in the shadows, guiding the U.S. toward a great destiny. Reagan has been noted on saying that this is a land of destiny, for one. And in many of his speeches, he had reiterated, quote, "And our forefathers found their way here by some divine system of selective service, gathered here to fulfill a mission to advance man a further step in his climb from the swamps." Speaking a little bit of how Manly P. Hall had written about his works.
Mm-hmm.
One part of that book, The Secret Destiny of America, now, this is the part that might jog people's memory, is that it talks about a stranger who entered the Philadelphia State House when the signing of the Declaration of Independence was taking place. He made an incredible speech. Everyone was floored by it. It persuaded delegates to rush forward and place their signatures on the document. And once they all threw around some high fives and smack an ass and they turned around, the mysterious man was gone. We mentioned this in some kind of link with Helena Blavatsky, you know, the founder of Theosophy, and her ascended masters, and that Count of Saint Germain was an ascended master here to, in times of need for the world, make things right. And signing the Declaration of Independence to establish the U.S. was one of those. Now, there's plenty of verifiable reasons to suggest that this never happened, of course. The mysterious man, that is. Like, say, Hall found a tale in a collection of folkloric stories about America's founding called, quote-unquote, The Speech of the Unknown, published in 1847 by American social reformer George Lippard. George was friends with Edgar Allan Poe and had a very strong taste for the gothic, for the unknown, for the weird. And George is even quoted saying, quote, "The name of the orator is not definitely known. In this speech, it is my wish to compress some portion of the fiery eloquence of the time. In other words, I'm going to make some shit up in the way that it fits for the time period."
Yeah, Speech of the Unknown. He's speaking Pokemon.
Wow. I did not expect that. But thank you, though. I like that.
I know a little bit about Pokemon.
In Hall's version, we see him attribute the writings to Thomas Jefferson. Why? No one has a fucking clue why. But when Reagan addressed the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington on January 25th, 1974, he said the tale was told to him, quote, "some years ago by a writer who happened to be an avid student of history, Manly P. Hall. I was told by this man that the story could be found in the writings of Jefferson. I confess, I never researched or made an effort to verify it," end quote. Yeah, I don't give a fuck. You tell me anything you want, and I'll believe it. Because I'm an old senile man. I have dementia. Just like Florence Harding, Ronald and Nancy Reagan had a rich history of consulting astrologers. Carol Ryder, also known as the Gregarious Aquarius, was Ronald Reagan's, and at the time, Nancy Davis's, stargazer throughout the 50s about their acting careers, and eventually for Reagan's presidential bid in 1976, although Carol said now was probably not the best time. Well, Nancy didn't appreciate that and decided, you know what, we're going to distance ourselves from Ryder. And so they did. They moved on to a new astrologer named Joan Quigley. Joan would help with Reagan's new presidential run, because we all know that Reagan ran from 1981 to 1989.
Yeah.
Now, in that presidential race, obviously, Reagan won. Reagan beat Carter.
You know, we call it a presidential race, but I need to see these presidents like actually race each other.
Yeah.
Because I think it'd be, one, funny.
Yeah, and it would also be, no pun intended, fitting to see how fit they are if they can even run and as president.
And I think it should be a like a multi different kind of race, like one on foot, one on bicycle, one on a car.
Reagan won against Carter in 1980, became the president from 1981 to 1989. Electoral votes, you need 270 to win. Perhaps Joan and or Carol knew something was up about the recent run and the now 1980 run, because Reagan won with 489 electoral votes, and Jimmy Carter sat there all night watching, and he had 49.
Ooh.
So Carter fucked up.
God damn that.
Oh,
hurts.
Oh yeah. You look at the map, it's like, I don't know, Michigan and Rhode Island, that's blue. Everything else is red. Like, it's fucking insane. But whatever.
That is what we call Red Nation.
That is Red Nation, yes.
But we're not going to use the fucking song that was literally made only for the Kansas City Chiefs.
No. So this led Quigley to work with Ronald and Nancy even more after she somehow proved her worth with that presidential bid. They're like, wow, well, okay, maybe Quigley knows something. As a result of his 1981 assassination attempt, Quigley's astrological readings ultimately influenced the timing of press conferences, debates, foreign negotiations, congressional requests, and Air Force One departures.
Do you think he canceled like speeches because he's like, Mercury's in retrograde. I can't do that this week.
Yes, no, I do. Quigley and Nancy worked with Ronald's schedule. Yes, marking the president's calendar with colors that indicated the astrological prospects. Literally, green was good, yellow was and red was bad.
Oh, good lord!
In due time, the Reagans and Joan Quigley parted ways once the Federation of American Scientists started going, what the fuck are you doing?
Oh, God, I wish we had hit presidents again.
I thought you were going to say Hitler.
No!
I'm like, Josh, be careful what the next syllable that comes out of your mouth is.
Well, not to mention I said hip.
Oh, I heard hip. Oh, hippo. I want a hippo. I already said this.
You are a hippo.
Because it's got pot in name. Hippopot is a must.
Oh, you're just going to ignore what I said?
In the documentary, The Reagans, it is shown to us that Mrs. Reagan cemented the partnership with Joan Quigley for $3,000 a month and was quoted saying literally this, lie if you have to, just lie to her astrologer. And Quigley was like, okay, sure, that's fine.
I'm pretty sure that's all they do.
Well, her biggest claim to fame, her biggest claim to fame was talking with Mrs. Reagan for a number of hours prior to the 1986 Reykjavik summit after reading Gorbachev's horoscope, which apparently led to the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty between the United States and the Soviet Union. Basically, what I just said, denuclearization was achieved by a fucking stargazer. You heard it here first.
Good.
There you
Lord.
Go. There you go.
I can't give you the nuclear codes today, Mr. President. Mercury's in retrograde.
Oh, no, I totally get it. We'll wait till next month. But yeah, that ends my tale about President's Day and some of the weird and wild and wacky shit that they went through in order to run this country.
I love it. I love it here. This is great.
Sure. You can call it whatever the hell you want. Is this freedom?
Sure.
Freedom?
Yeah, yeah. It's a word for it.
Yeah, well.
I am glad that we can do these themed holidays specials because I think it's fun.
I do too. It's a little more laid back.
We haven't done one since.
Well, It's been a while. Yeah. It's been a while.
Maybe Halloween, because we did Listener Tales, I guess.
Yeah, we can call that one.
And then before that, it was like Christmas.
I don't know. But I wonder how much more is going on.
Oh, I guarantee you there's plenty.
Well, I mean, shit. Trump in 2016, I mean, it was also prior to Trump. QAnon, you could say that plays a part in this spooky, weird shit.
Yeah.
This cult, hive mind-like mentality and whatnot, and how it's supposed to dictate how some of our politicians and you know, leader of the free world act and declare how they decide.
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
Yeah, and like if you look at like the layout of a lot of the, like the landmarks in Washington D.C., they apparently make a pentagram.
I know there's a lot of Freemasonry in there. Uh-huh. Obviously,
damn satanic governments.
But yeah, that is what I have for our President's Day special. If anyone out there has any other stories, whether it be that you found online or found in a book, or that, I don't know, maybe your dad was a fucking attorney general 30, 40 years ago and has some weird shit that he would like to talk about.
That'd be cool.
Send it in. If you have any of that, send it in, please. We would love to hear it. But yeah, I think that'll do it. I think what you also need to be reminded of is Frogman Festival.
It's a coming,
just like us.
What?
March 2nd, 2024. Frogmanfestival.org. That's where you can find all of your information. It's at the Oasis Conference Center in Loveland, Ohio.
And we got plenty of speakers coming up too, like Sherry Brake, James Willis, Sarah Angel, Jeffrey Wilson, Cameron Jones, M. Kristen Smith and Kevin Moore, Courtney Block, and Ashley Hill. It's going to be a good motherfucking time.
Absolutely. And if you're out there and you're playing Pal World, it's okay. Fuck the haters.
Yeah.
Just play it and enjoy it.
Until Nintendo sends out their Hitmen.
Yeah, then be a little bit scared. maybe delete it and your whole computer, like, get rid of your IP address so they can't track you and everything like that. But yeah, that's what you should absolutely do. But yeah, with that, I think the episode is done. We're moving on to bigger and better things.
I'm excited. I don't know what's next.
I don't either. but we'll find out probably day before. and you will all hear from us soon. Check us out on our social medias. You know the drill. I'm going to project sign off with Josh here.
If you can review or like or follow, make sure if you're listening to us on Spotify, make sure you hit that follow button because it really helps.
It really does help us. Rate and review us, please.
Please.
Please, out of anything I just said, rate and
review.
If you
don't, I'm going to find you at a convention. I'm going to take your phone and I'm going to do it for you.
You know, maybe we should do that on our booth. We will pay you a dollar if you give us our phone so we can rate and review ourselves.
Just be like, oh, let me look at your phone and be like, okay, Spotify, the farthest reach is there. And be like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. Ooh, 5 stars, like, follow.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Oh, look at these dick pics. I'm going to send to myself. Oh, wow, cool.
No, we're not doing that.
Oh, with that, we'll see you all later.
Goodbye.
Hey, everyone. We here at the Farthest Reaches want to say thank you, because you, the listeners, make all of this possible. Please share our podcast with your friends, your family, or total strangers. You can find and connect with us on Facebook at the Farthest Reaches Podcast, Instagram at the Farthest Reaches, or Twitter at TFRPodOfficial. There we will be posting all sorts of strange stuff and updates for upcoming episodes and whatever else we get ourselves into. If you would like to share a personal story by chance, then you can reach us at our email, thefarthestreachespodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, and maybe we will even tell your story to the world. In the meantime, though, explore the elusive, seek the knowledge of the obscure, and together we can translate this strange language of reality into something that we can understand. With that said, thanks for tuning in.